You're listening to episode one of the Book Thingo podcast, recorded on November 4, 2012 at Shonrakon in Sydney. Book Thingo would like to acknowledge the traditional owners and custodians of the land on which this episode was recorded, the Darug people. We also acknowledge the contributions of Aboriginal Australians to our shared literary heritage. Coming up on this episode, Sarah Wendell, Kate Cuthbert and I chat about Aussie food fetishes, Julianne Long's Penny Royal Green series, books that would make great films and TV shows, fast-paced romances, the angst when actors leave TV shows, the Wiggles as romance heroes, reading the ending of a book first, why dogs should never die in a romance book, and books by Anna Campbell and Sherry Thomas.
Welcome to the Book Thingo podcast, talking about books we love, especially romance. Kill a fairy fast on the Book Thingo podcast.
Welcome to the launch episode of the Book Thingo podcast. I'm Kat Mayo and I run Book Thingo, an Aussie blog for romance readers. You can find me, along with my six fabulous co-bloggers, at bookthingo.com.au. What better way to kick off our podcasting endeavour than to chat with two mavens of romance, Sarah Wendell of Smart Bitches Trashy Books and Kate Cuthbert, Managing Editor of Escape Publishing. I caught up with them at the very first GenreCon event at Rosehill in Sydney's West, and I basically just recorded us chatting about books. It's been 2 years since, but I hope you'll agree with me that all the books we talk about are just as interesting now as they were then. This episode was originally recorded in video, but for various reasons, mainly my technical incompetence, I have converted it to audio only. You can find information on all the books and TV shows we talk about in this episode by going to bookthingo.com.au/podcast and clicking on episode number one. The audio for this podcast was produced by the incomparable Rudy Bremer. You might also know her as the maker of the most awesome shoes in the universe. Don't worry, I'll include a link to the shoes in the show notes. I'm here with Sarah Wendell from Smart Bitches Trashy Books, and Kate Cuthbert, reader, reviewer, and now acquisitions editor for Harlequin Escape. We're just going to chat about books.
I don't know anything about books. Crap. We're going to make crap up.
Expectations dashed.
Yes, I know.
And GenreCon. So maybe I should start off and ask you what you thought of the convention, and Sarah, how what your experiences were being in a convention in Australia as opposed to the US conventions that you've...
Well, there's a couple cultural differences. You guys have morning tea, lunch, and afternoon tea, and I think that is the greatest thing ever, especially because it comes with little individual candy bars or packets of Tim Tams, and I was like, we need to start doing this in the States.
I have a sneaking suspicion that they specifically request Tim Tams. Because I've never been to many conferences where we've had individually wrapped Tim Tams.
I've never seen it before.
I was very excited. And all these people say, hey, did you see this Tim Tams? I'm like, I know. I nearly took the whole tray and dumped it in my bag.
You might be right, though, actually, because I would say the vast majority of the conferences I've attended, it's all about the scones at morning tea with the cream and the jam, and that didn't happen once.
So no, but
I'm thinking they're bowing to you.
I don't know. I'm okay with that because the morning tea food was really good. We had like some sort of puff pastry with curry inside this morning. I didn't even need to eat lunch. I had four.
I didn't even need three to your session, and that was munching while you. And then when they had to put extra chairs in Sarah's session because there were so many people, I took that opportunity to go out and eat some more.
That's really good. Yeah. I think that's excellent.
It's dinner and a show.
That's right.
Conference style.
Hey, I don't care if there's munching during my session. There should be. I mean, I had a 90-minute session. I was amazed when they stuck the little thing in. It said 15 more minutes. I was like, oh, crap!
That was the best way for letting people know.
Oh, yeah.
Because normally they have someone sort of sitting in the front row going,
with
a little 15-minute at the back. You know, it wasn't disruptive. It didn't freak me out.
And 15 minutes is enough time to have one last good topic go around.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you have time. If you just got 5 minutes, like, we're done.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah. That was great.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed how welcoming everyone was. especially because I've been so worried about my family back home.
Yeah.
I have loved how welcoming everyone is and how curious people are about how I'm finding Australia. Like, people are very proud to introduce Australia to me in all their little individual ways. Like, well, I live down by the sea and I don't have this, but we have that. And so I'm learning all about these different parts of Australia because people are really eager to introduce Australia to you. It's like, it's so freaking far to come here that people are really...
She visited us.
I know. I said, really? They were like, you came. I'm like, well, hell yeah, I came. It's Australia. I've always wanted to come here. And it's like a big deal to have the international guests.
It is. We run into the problems all the time where people just don't want to make the flight. You know,
how could you not? There's Tim Tams and curry in a pie. Oh, and they do this thing with a pie. They have a little pie. They put the gravy in the pie, and then they put more pie on top, so it's meat in a pie. It's amazing.
Where did you have that?
Here, morning tea yesterday. Oh, there were little gravy pies and little pockets with more gravy, and then there was, it was carrot cake. And today was the special Australian thing with the coconut.
ShamrockCon was not at all about the guests or the books. It was all about the food.
It was Lamington.
Lamingtons. Lamingtons, thank you. Oh my, and people are like, did you see the Lamingtons? I'm like, I had three.
Can I just say, someone actually mentioned to me whether or not we had offered you some Lamingtons to taste. So when I saw that this morning, I'm like, there you go. They've got everything.
I have eaten the full experience of Australian junk food.
Vegemite.
I have Vegemite.
Oh, good.
I actually use it in my cooking.
Oh,
do you?
I do. If you make a vegetarian broth,
yes,
and it doesn't have enough depth of flavor, yeah, or you're making something that's a little too acidic or a little too sweet, about a teaspoon of Vegemite helps balance out the umami very nicely. And somebody sent me Vegemite in a tube, so it's really easy to measure out into a tablespoon. And I have to be really careful because my husband doesn't like the taste of Vegemite, and if I add too much, he goes... You put it in there, didn't you? No, not at all.
I'm having an ongoing argument with my husband because he's Australian, I'm Canadian, and we have a child together, and he wants to feed her Vegemite on toast, and I can't handle the idea of my child growing up eating Vegemite on toast. It hurts me.
Well, why don't you do a culture exchange?
Well, this is what
we've
done.
I will give you poutine, and we will do Vegemite.
You can't do poutine correctly, you can't get the right cheese, but what I have...
You can't?
No, I know.
Bar.
9 years. But what we've done,
really fly with cheese curds. They don't travel well. You'd be that person on the plane, like, she smells. My God. Well, they're only 14-hour cheese curds. What do you want?
But they should be able to be snacking on them all the way across the Pacific. So he's allowed to feed her Vegemite on toast if I'm allowed to feed her maple syrup on sausages.
Well, yeah.
And that's the exchange. That's the exchange.
That is
going
a fair
for,
culinary exchange. So. You've actually hit all the major flavors there. Sour, sweet, salty. You've covered
We're
it.
Good. She's going to grow up, confused. I think she's probably going to grow up very confused. But at least we feel balanced.
I hate to talk about books some more.
I like to talk about books. Let's do that part.
Have you read any books while you've been here?
Yes. Oh, God. On the flight over, I read the flights from Newark to L.A. I read two novellas. And then on the flight from L.A. to Sydney, I read a novel. And I really wanted to get 8 hours of sleep. It was my goal. And I really don't sleep well on airplanes. So it was me plus an Ambien. Put the little mask on, put the plugs in. And I could really only do 6 hours before my brain was like, you're awake now. Go do something. So I ended up finishing the book. It was How the Marquess Was Won by Julia.
Oh.
That is the noise that I... It's a good book noise. That is the noise that I made.
We Kat and I discovered Julianne Long. Was it last year? Or earlier this year?
And I actually also read it, I think, just before or during, like a holiday as well.
It's a very good holiday book because you get the warm, fuzzy tingles.
Yes.
So I was on the plane wrapped in a blanket. I had the blanket over my head because I have the Kindle with the light screen and I didn't want to bother my neighbor. So I had the blanket pulled up over my head and I had my eye mask pushed up so my hair was kind of like this. And I was just with the Kindle. I didn't even have my glasses on. And I was probably sitting like that for about an hour and a half finishing the book. And I finished it and went...
It was such... That was one of my very favorites.
It was a wonderful book. And then I just finished her newest book, A Notorious Countess Confesses.
Which I stole from Sarah's bag.
I didn't steal it. I brought books for everybody.
I stole from other people. Yeah.
You organized it. You organized the tea. You totally get first dibs.
Well, it was funny, right? Because we had high tea with Sarah last week in Sydney.
It was wonderful. The scones were like...
Yeah, and she was lovely enough to come bearing books, enough for everybody. So she opens the bag, she gets a handful, and I'm thinking, please don't let one of those be the Julianne Law. She was going to the other table. And then as soon as she left, Anna and I sort of went, Julianne Long, Catherine Ash, Sherry Thomas, who wants that? And then Anna and I kind of looked at each other and were like, do you want the Julianne Long? Oh, you can have it if you want. Oh, I'll buy it anyway. And we kind of had that, you can have it.
But I want it.
Yeah, but there might be a fist fight.
Have you read it yet?
Yes, I have. I finished it.
What did you think?
Well, I still like how the Marquess was one best.
Yep.
And I think what I did for a Duke,
yeah,
my mm-hmm. second. I think it was a bit slower in the beginning than I was expecting, but it still had some really lovely emotional moments.
There were really, really beautiful moments.
And the conflicts, I think, were really, you could really understand them. They weren't, I mean, of course, the situations were crafted by the author, but once she put the characters in there, it was all very organic, how mm-hmm. they couldn't see any possible way that they could be together because, you know, she used to be a courtesan and he's a vicar and, you know, an outstanding member of the community.
Yes.
And I love that he didn't even consider not being a vicar because that was part of who he was. And
yeah, that was his living.
Yeah, there wasn't anything he could do. He couldn't just throw it all away for her because that would not, it wouldn't have been a realistic solution to their problem.
The thing I loved about it is that the hero, Adam, is a really wonderful beta hero. He's not the biggest, strongest, most alpha. He's not the big, strong, angry, domineering, knows best. He's a very quiet, very patient man who found himself as a vicar because his family owned the living and they gave it to him. And there's one scene where he's looking at one of the other Everseys and he says something about how he never had the wild youth that they did because in order to do that you had to have money and he didn't. And it's hinted that he had a very rough upbringing. And that he had a very miserable childhood and was very watchful to keep himself safe. But that he knows that he has a much harder life than they do because he has to comfort the dying and comfort mothers whose children are sick and help with births and marriages and anger and settle neighborly disputes. And he recognizes the power of the responsibility he has for the town, and he's very strong.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not a weak character. He's not at their mercy. Even though they try to maneuver him that way,
yeah.
He has an incredible amount of internal moral strength, and he was a wonderful, wonderful beta hero.
I have this argument with authors all the time, well, not authors, I suppose, but would-be writers,
mm-hmm.
about the difference between alpha males and the beta heroes, because
mm-hmm.
I love beta heroes. I love the strong, quiet, the thinkers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in terms of romance, those are characters that you can build so much upon. But that's exactly it. Beta heroes are not weak. They're not just
they
because
not
they're not
else's mercy.
Loud and boisterous. It doesn't make them meek.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have their own strength. It's just a very different strength, and it's harder to see, I suppose. You can't make him throw his weight around all
no.
the time in order to demonstrate how
and
strong
it wouldn't
he
work.
Is.
He wouldn't work as
no.
the vicar because he's sort of the connecting point for so
yeah.
much of the town. He can't be an undue influence because it would be too easy for him to abuse his power.
And I think Julianne Long writes it very well, this
mm-hmm.
character.
Yes.
The other thing that,
well
I,
done.
That I love about the book is she has a lot of female relationships in the book, and they're not all happy, happy relationships.
No,
they're
real.
The dynamics between the females are very real fights that women
real
have
women
with each
have.
Other in
oh,
competition.
These two girls are so snippy
yeah.
to each other. Well, you know, some girls who are idiots, like, whoa! The only thing I didn't like is that it has a very slow development, and it worked for me because I understood the depths and the layers of the conflict, and that it wouldn't be easy for them to be together, and I kept trying to think, how are they going to work this out? So when I got to the end, I was like, that ending group came along really fast. It was like boom, 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 boom. It was like
it's very sudden.
It's like if you watch a movie on cable in America and it's coming up against the 11 o'clock news, you know the movie's going to end in the next 5 minutes because the 11 o'clock news is going to start at 11, and so it's going to be like, we're done. Thank you, everyone. Go home. Here are the credits. I mean, it was a really fast resolution for every single person in the book who was in the town.
Yeah.
They all had this unanimous change of opinion. and it was very difficult for me to believe it. I wanted to believe it. I wanted to believe that that happened. I wanted to think
the bow was just a little bit too neat.
Oh, it was perfect. It was exactly the right way to put it. The bow was just too perfectly neat, and I could not believe that characters that had acted so human and so understandably throughout the rest of the book were like, I was wrong, okay, happy ending, thanks, bye.
Yeah, I think she had opportunities in the story to integrate those character arcs that kind of were a little bit missed. Mm-hmm. But oh well. I still cry.
Yes, it's like you were saying when we were talking about, who's Joanna Bourne you said this about? It was Joe Goodman.
Joe Goodman.
Even if it's not the best of her books, it's still a standout book. It's still really powerful and a good read. And that was exactly how I felt. Like, oh, it wasn't quite how The Marquess was won, but wow, that was a good read.
Have you read it?
No, not yet. Okay, Emma's just taking my job. Haven't read for pleasure.
Because I've got a slightly spoilery question. So Olivia and Lion were briefly mentioned in this book.
Yeah.
And did you get the feeling that she might be trying to head to a different sort of romance for those two? Or is this just a red herring,
do you think? It's a red herring.
Because it's been built up so much that if she tried to do anything else, people would stalk her in a bad way.
I do not think she can divert from Olivia and Lion, but I think that one of the things that Olivia says during the course of the book is that she's recognized that she's grown up now and she's an adult, and something very painful happens to Olivia in the mm-hmm. book, and she has to realize that there's a possibility that he has entirely given up on her, and she needs to give up on him now. She needs to let it go. Mm-hmm. And so she's sort of taking steps to further her own, I guess we'd call it further her own growing up.
Yeah.
But I don't think she can divert from Olivia and Lion. It would be really, really challenging to pull that off, because that's sort of the backstory that readers have been building.
Well, it's funny because I think we mentioned this in the podcast. I've only just recently discovered Julianne Moore's books. I think would have been late last year. So about a year now that mm-hmm. I've been reading her books. And I kind of sped through her backlist once I discovered the books that I loved.
Yeah.
So for me, that investment in Olivia and Lion isn't so great. It's like they're there in the background, and yeah, there's some sort of backstory. And I didn't read it in order either, so it's kind of all
no.
a bit... Yeah, so
and isn't it amazing that you can? If you read them out of order, it doesn't make you go, oh, I totally spoiled that other book for myself.
They keep talking about Colin Eversy, and I hadn't read his book, but I really wanted to after reading all this stuff about the song.
Oh, he has his own song! Got his own song!
So I'm not so invested in Olivia and Lion. So that's why I thought, oh, that's a bit interesting. But maybe I'm just more open to having a different possibility. When I tweeted that, people were like, there is no way.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay.
One of the things, she was my book club selection last month mm-hmm. for October. And during the book club chat, all of the people who were there were saying, you know, this would just make such a good television drama.
Yeah.
It would be all, it's like all of the things you love about small town contemporary romance in a historical setting. There's lots of characters. It's very dishy. And I said, this would just be the greatest television show. We should all pool our money, do a Kickstarter, and make Penny Royal Green an hour-long drama. We can kidnap that guy who does Downton Abbey, tie him to a chair, help us pull this off. Wouldn't it be a wonderful, wonderful series? I mean, even the novels have wonderful little episodes inside them. It would be so good.
I just think that's so true of so many, just across the board, romance novels. I don't know if you guys feel this way, but I have a really hard time watching romantic comedies because I feel like the heroines are always ridiculous. They're either shrews or falling over all the time. You know, the plot arc is really shallow. There's no emotions. And I just think we have this depth and wealth of novels that are just gorgeous. You know, that could really inform Hollywood in such a stronger way. And category romances, for heaven's sakes, are the perfect length to create a couple of...
Can you imagine the amnesiac Mistress Bride being a television show? I mean, I think it would be good, but also
what
really
interesting.
What was
the Kelly Hunter we were talking about?
Oh, Red Renegade.
Versus, in the U.S. it was Her Singapore Fling. Isn't that a terrible title?
It's just really, it's not even alliterative.
It's not even accurate. It wasn't even a fling. They were, together. There was no fling. There was nothing flinging about that whole story. No flingingness at all. Would that not make an amazing movie?
It really would. I'm constantly saying this to people every time anyone tells me they work in television or movies. Mm-hmm. I'm like, really?
Yes.
Well, I have this great idea.
Yes.
Speaking of film and TV, I don't know if it's just me, but have you found that the way that authors write now is very episodic as well?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure whether it's to do with this sort of almost unbreakable rule where each scene has to be only from one point of view, so mm-hmm. we kind of get this view. When I read stuff like The Psy Changeling, Nalini Singh, sometimes
yes.
she breaks up her chapters in very short sections.
Yeah.
And they kind of, to me, feel like she's describing a movie, which I suppose if you're an author, you're describing what you see.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just wondering whether that's a trend that you've noticed or whether it's just me. Because if I compare like a Kinsale or a Marsha Canham from way back,
yeah.
those
they're
scenes
not
are much
in a,
longer.
In a
that's one
way.
Scene that'll be like 10,
yeah.
15, 20 pages.
And
yeah.
I think that they move a little bit slower as well.
They do. The plots are very slow.
Yeah. I think, I don't know, I haven't noticed episodic, but I've definitely noticed faster action.
Jane from Dear Author once said to me a really long time ago, she was talking about somebody, I forget whose book, was described as slow, and she's like, please, compared to this, Joe Goodman looks like James Cameron. This shit's blowing up. And,
well, you know, Mel Jean Brooke, her debut novel, everyone was like, the pacing was really off, and I'm like,
no, it's wonderful.
So I loved it, and I didn't want it to end. Like, I was like, should be a longer book. People were complaining.
That's a really good example of sort of that long, slow building story.
Yeah.
That doesn't rely on the explosions and a ton of hot sex in order to move the story on. No, I miss that kind
Me
of
too.
Really thick, meaty novel.
You know, it's not honestly something that I've paid attention to.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been thinking about this, like, how do you read? When you're reading, do you picture things in your mind or do you hear a voice? I usually hear a voice reading to me. And I don't make up voices for the characters, but I'm hearing the reading. I'm hearing something reading to me. And I don't picture all of the scenes in my head. I'm just listening to myself sort of tell myself the story. But I know a lot of people read and they see the whole picture and they talk about who they cast as this character and who in their mind was this character. And I haven't really thought about the length of the scenes and how much the narrative is allowed to develop. But now I want to pay attention to that because that's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good question because so much of American episodic television seems to be shorter and shorter segments. Like, any minute now, we're going to have, like, one guy. And then, cut to commercial.
Yeah. And it always has to be,
you,
like, a cliffhanger before
yes.
you break,
don't
break know. That section. Yeah.
Yeah.
Remember watching, my husband and I are working our way through The Wire at the moment.
Mm, okay.
And we were watching we had season 4 and we didn't have season 5. And we were so desperate for more Wire, we actually watched all the bonus features, which I never do. And they were talking a little bit about how they're having so much trouble keeping viewers because the story builds.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't start immediately
and
with
explosions.
You can't
enter in the middle.
And that's exactly
so easily. Same thing with Breaking Bad.
Mm.
It's really hard to show up in the middle of that and truly understand the extent of what has happened in previous seasons. Do you guys have Breaking Bad down here yet?
I think that people know and have watched it. I don't actually
I don't know if it's officially here. That is, I think Breaking Bad is in his sixth season or maybe seventh season. It's about a chemistry teacher who finds out he's dying of cancer and he starts cooking meth.
I think that we actually just started getting that series on free to air because they won awards.
Oh yes, won a lot of awards.
Yeah,
very much.
But I mean, is that cultural now that our attention spans are so small that we literally have to have explosions in order to keep our attention? We can't follow that sort of thing anymore.
I like not longer narratives because I like to watch documentaries. I have a little documentary fetish, so I watched a documentary about the font Helvetica.
Isn't it
fascinating? Like, everyone is like, it's Helvetica.
Yeah.
You see it everywhere and how it was invented and who made it and the guy who... Oh, smoke! Fonts, people. Telling you, fonts. It was amazing. And so I'm used to this whole hour-long narrative being about this one thing. And then there's another one called Hero Dreams of Sushi about an 80-some-odd-year-old sushi chef who runs this incredibly difficult-to-get-into restaurant that's like in a bus station. and the minimum, I want to say the minimum for dinner is like $400. It's a very expensive dinner, and it's one course after another, and it's all handmade in front of you, and it's the best, some of the best sushi, and it's about the guy who created the restaurant, his two sons who now manage one, and then a satellite version. I think that was maybe an hour to an hour and half, maybe. I can't remember if it was full 90 minutes. All I wanted to see was more about these characters, and it was only like four guys. So I'm used to that slower development because I like documentaries so much.
So let me turn this to a 50 Shades of Grey discussion. Because
speaking of episodes.
Well, I'm not a big...
Is there a red room of pain?
I'm not overly familiar with the fan fiction community, but as far as I understand it, they write... the way that they write is sort of episodic as well. So they'll put an installment out and then readers will come in. If they want some more, they'll put some out. So I'm wondering whether the popularity of that book is partly to do with the fact that it was written
in short chunks,
and designed so that the end of one chunk, you know, kind of has a cliffhanger that makes you want to read the next chunk.
And the Hunger Games is written the same way. The end of every chapter, you can't stop reading because something twists and changes, or the stakes change.
I mean,
it's not a new technique.
The Da Vinci Code is written like that. Yes. Every chapter was ended with, you know, they were scared, but if they know what to come next, they would have been even more scared.
Dun, dun, dun. And now a word from our sponsor.
Yeah.
I do not know, but I think that the similarity between episodic television and fanfic is interesting. There was an article online that I haven't finished reading called Television is the New Novel, about it's not just a novel length now, it's multiple episodes over an entire year, and that's one piece of a larger story where there's more popular television shows that build tiny bit by tiny bit, and the complete story, like, for example, the complete story of Downton Abbey could be four whole seasons. That's one book. That's only one story.
Can I make an admission, and it's going to lead to my next question.
Yes.
When I start a series, I prefer that it's finished.
Oh, you are not alone.
Then I can Wikipedia it,
you
figure out who
alone.
Ends up with who. And then when I start it, I know that, oh, these people, they'll break up. I should not get too emotionally attached to them. So Grey's Anatomy is one of these exceptions. So I read it, I think I started it when it was in season 7 and went from season 1 to season 7, and now it's season 8 or season 9. And I'm like, I hate this.
It never ends.
And then I don't know if they'll get together. I can't. There's no spoilers. And now I think Australia's trying to keep up with the US in terms of screening it as soon as it comes out, which is like 5 days apparently in Australian time.
Yeah.
But anyway,
it has to travel slowly around here, very slowly.
With TV, actors leave, and there's nothing that the script writers can do about it.
I know.
Did you ever watch McCloud's Daughter?
No.
McCloud's Daughter was this sort of rural Australian nighttime drama about two sisters who inherit it's a sheep station, I think.
I think so.
And one was raised with her dad on the sheep station and fully intended to inherit it, and the other one went off with her mother after the father and the mother divorced and was raised in this really glamorous Sydney lifestyle. But
this sounds like Montana Sky from Will Roberts.
The city girl eventually comes to the country, the two of them become really good friends, et cetera, et cetera. And it goes on for a couple of seasons, and really, look, I came over to Australia and discovered the series. I loved it. Awesome. But one by one, the McLeod's daughters left the show, and in order to keep going, they had to start inventing new daughters.
Oh.
You know, this
surprise!
This long-running character who was
adults.
The child of their housekeeper. Well, it actually turns out she's a McLeod secret daughter to keep it going. It
really,
so.
It's like an horror episode.
Do you know? I remember when they used to have Home and Away, and one of the main characters left the show. They just replaced her with a different actor who sort of looked similar, and then just pretended that nothing happened.
They do that on children's shows, and it makes parents insane.
Oh, does it?
Yes, there's a show called The Fresh Beat Band, which is really annoying on Nickelodeon in the US, and there's four characters, and they each have like a color-coded outfit, and they sing and they dance, and they have a sort of really happy, peppy thing, and then because they're a band, Nickelodeon can send them out on tour, and they can make more money going to concerts. Well, one of them decided that she was getting married, mm-hmm. and she didn't want to do the show anymore, and she wanted to go on her honeymoon and then be at home and start a family. And so they just, without an announcement, just replaced her with another red-haired actress who doesn't look at all like the first one, and they put her in her clothes, and kids can tell the difference. It's a different person. It's not the same person. And there was no explanation, and parents were like, what the hell? My kid's like, Mommy, something's wrong. She's gone. Yeah. I'm like, I don't know who that is either, honey. And it's like, you think kids won't notice? It's an entirely different human being. I was a little irritated. I don't even like the show.
Well, they replaced the Yellow Wiggle.
Oh, yeah.
But they had a big handoff.
They had a big handoff. Like, here, I'm giving you this.
This is Sam.
I'm running into an issue now because my daughter's only two, so she only knows Sam.
And
she
Greg
doesn't
is back
know
for
who
like
Greg.
A week.
No.
Yeah.
So she's really upset about, you know, who this new Yellow Wiggle is.
That's all right. As soon as he's done being around the world in, like, 100 days, they're all going to retire anyway.
Except the blue one, Anthony. He's sticking around.
He can't leave.
No.
He's the controlling one.
You can totally tell, too.
Oh, he's totally the controlling element, he and his brother. Like, I was thinking, could you make a romance out of the Wiggles? Like, you know, four guys and a young adult band and, you know, having...
In colorful skivvies.
And I was like, well, I could easily, you know, Murray's a total beta male. He's very good with... I've seen the show live 3 times now and in America, and he's wonderful. Like, and one of the things that's really interesting is that they build time into their live shows, and they'll be in, like, this big-ass arena. They build time to go wander around in the stands and collect presents and meet the kids. And so they'll do something, and one of the Wiggles will just be wandering around the balcony. So Murray, very beta, very mellow. Jeff, very sleepy, very mellow.
I don't know, narcoleptic hero.
Narcoleptic hero. It happens.
Totally see that.
The koala. Wasn't there a narcoleptic koala hero in your cover snark yesterday? So yesterday night, Sarah did a live cover snark of the special Australian edition featuring koalas and platypuses that should not be in the positions that they were put in.
Yes.
I had nightmares about executive koala.
Oh, my God. Is that not scary?
He was the... God.
No,
he was
worse
than the exorcist when her head goes around.
No,
it was this koala with...
Red eyes,
but you could barely see the koala. You could really just sort of see the fur, and this sounds ridiculous, but it was scary. The fur on the
ears. Oh,
the
freaky.
Red eyes,
really freaky.
And a gun pointed right
at
out.
Oh, really freaky. No, the narcoleptic marsupials is my college mascot.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Okay, he has good sports teams, like fighting koalas. We don't fight, they sleep. They hang on the side of a slit. Yeah, we're fighting koalas. I really think you could make a romance out of the Wiggles, but I don't think you could make a romance hero out of Anthony.
No.
Just a little too controlling.
Well, Sam did marry one of the backup dancers.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Not Dorothy.
No.
Lynn.
She's American.
Mm. Okay. So my next question, which we kind of got sidetracked, was do you read the back of the books first when you read a book? Ever? Sometimes?
Has Kat told you about this yet? Mm. Kat runs a secondary blog.
It's called Kill a Fairy. And we were talking on Twitter one day about reading the back of the books, and all these people were like, oh my God, why do you do that? That's just like the most shocking thing we've ever heard. So
read the end of the book?
Yeah, before
read the end
reading
of the book first.
The book.
Yeah.
Oh.
To make sure that the ending is going to be what
should
people...
read the end with the intention of reading the book, not just read the end and then because you will never get it anyway. So then we created this hashtag, Kill a Fairy, because it seemed like doing it seemed just as bad as killing these innocent creatures. So then eventually I created this blog, and all the blog is about is revealing the endings, you know, kind of like spoiler ending for movies.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
There are none for books, and for ebooks, it's outrageous. I can't browse the pages that I need to browse.
There's a site called Movie Pooper. Where it's Movie Pooper spoils the ending of a movie.
Good because I need to know what happens to Bubbles in season 5 of The Wire. I don't want to watch if he dies.
I don't know if they do TV shows. They definitely do movies, but I bet you can find out.
I need to find someone who will tell me about Bubbles.
So no ending is sacred on Kill a Fairy.
I understand. There are some where I absolutely will, especially if it's a genre that's not entirely romance. Like if I'm reading a romance with a predominantly, or I'm reading a mystery with a very dominant romantic arc, I will check the end to make sure nobody's dying at the end.
Yeah.
Like I checked, there's a wonderful romance series by Julia Spencer Fleming that is really, really good, but the lead characters, it's a mystery series. Mm-hmm. They have a very powerful romance, but at the same time, it's not a romance, it's mystery. So there's really no obligation or expectation that they have to end up together. So every time I pick up a new one, I look at the end to make sure that everyone's okay, and then I go read
it. You know, crime fiction, I love reading the back of that, because this is what you have to do. You have to read it so you can see whether the love story ends okay, but without revealing who did it.
Yes.
it's like
and they held hands and walked off. All right, we're good. Yeah. And then he left her grave. Not good.
So you have to, like, skim it for certain words and certain names and just totally ignore things that you don't want to reveal to yourself.
It sounds like a really impressive skill, like something that you'd have to develop to be able to do appropriately.
I used to think of it as a personal challenge for me to, like, it would be like, should I do it? But I really need to know, okay.
Yep.
And then, okay, they're together, I can start reading again. Because part of the thrill of crime fiction as a reader is to guess who did it. So you don't actually want to spoil it because you want to know how clever you are.
Right? And the who did it is never the last line of the book. It has to be about the hero. The protagonist, the antagonist has to be removed and, you know, removed from power before the end of the book. He can't be the last scene.
Well, because the hero has to sort of debrief.
Right,
and the
hero has to complete their arc. It's always going to end with something to be having to do with the hero, unless, of course, it is a cliffhanger and the villain has to go do something really nefarious at the end of the book, and then you go...
And I don't think authors are conscious enough of that there are many readers like us who read the back of the book, so they're not really actually very careful about what they... have at the end of the book, so they're very careful about how they set it up in the beginning. But the ending is kind of, well, that's just the way it ends. But actually, if you have your last two pages reveal certain things that people might be looking for without revealing everything about your book, that would really actually help readers and not spoil it too much for them. So much that they were like, I've read it all.
I'm going to start writing romances under a pseudonym, and I'm going to start putting lines like, note to cat. They end up together.
Oh,
I won't tell you who did it.
I've actually, when people have requested stuff that sounded interesting, I've actually emailed back and said, can you please confirm that this is
up.
A romance and they end
yeah,
up
yeah, I don't blame you, because I've had authors tell me, oh yeah, it's a romance, and then one of the characters is all kinds of dead.
I know, and you run into that issue of a romantic story versus a romance novel.
Yeah.
I can't read the back of a book, because even if I am not intending to read the book and I find out that something bad happens, I still get depressed.
Yeah.
So I refuse to do it now, because I refuse to be depressed about a book that I'm not actually going to read.
Yeah.
I understand.
Actually, I know that feeling. I've had that feeling. That's why online is a little bit better, because you can read a spoiler devoid of the emotional stuff that the author tries to put in.
I get other people to tell me.
Yeah. Oh,
I
do that.
I read your blog.
This is why I follow her on Twitter, because she'll spoil the books.
I just want to tell you, here's what happened. I have had Jane from Dear Author and Angie James from Karina talking about books, and the funny thing is that their reading tastes line up a lot closer than my reading tastes line up with either of them. Every now and again we agree on something, but I'll listen to them talking about a book, and I will email one of them and say, that sounded really cool. I'm never going to read it. Will you tell me what happens? Oh, yeah. Okay, great. Now I understand. Thanks. Like Angel Fall by Susan E. I was never going to read that. That is not my genre. And I have a really big thing about kids in peril. I can't read about it. It makes me really just, I can't enjoy things with the kids in peril or kids getting hurt. I'm like, could you just tell me about the book? Oh, yeah. You don't want to read this. But
I ran into that with Susan Elizabeth Phillips. I did because I never read her. Mm-hmm. And then 2 years ago, I started the Susan Elizabeth Phillips. I was going to read them all. And one of the older ones has one where the kid falls down a well and then sits there because nobody knows that he's down there. And then, oh, God, sorry. I interrupted your story to tell my really tragic story.
Isn't it
horrible?
That's one of my things I can't deal with. And I've had authors email me and say, there's no children getting hurt. And then I open the book and, like, two 14-year-olds die in the second chapter. What? No. Now I have to read it and make sure that the villain gets an extra bad. Extra hard.
So they actually tell you?
No kids. And then I read in.
Because a 14-year-old isn't technically
a kid.
Anne Gracie does that now. Because
what,
she... kills kids now.
Anne Gracie. All the children.
She got into real strife with one of her early books because she killed the dog.
Oh, the dog.
Do you know that's the first author contact I made was Julia Quinn? Because this was a long time ago before I started Smart Bitches. I was rereading her first book, and there's a scene where the little boy is chasing his puppy into the street, and the heroine pushes the little boy out of the way of a carriage, and she gets hit and knocked on the head. Mm-hmm. And that's how the meet cute. That's how the hero meets the heroine. And I'm like, what about the dog? What about the puppy? So I was like all up in a twist about it. So I emailed her. I know you're going to think I'm crazy, but what happened to the dog? And she wrote back.
Oh.
She said it was so many versions of Wortico that she's sure that she doesn't remember, but the dog is fine.
Yeah. We've had this discussion on Twitter, and there are some people who've said, I don't mind if they kill humans, but dogs.
No, don't kill animals. Them. Don't kill the animals.
And the horse, I always feel so horrible when a horse dies. I can't handle
the
Napoleonic war scenes because they're always talking about the horses. There's soldiers littering the field. I'm like, yeah, whatever.
Horsey! There was one book where the heroine was trying, it was a, I read it a long time ago, but the heroine was trying to escape from the hero. Mm-hmm. She stole the hero's horse, and the horse balked and would not let her go somewhere that the horse knew was dangerous. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, it was the horse that ended up going over the cliff. And I was like, you are not a heroine. Mm-hmm. I hate you. I want you to go over the cliff. You suck.
And I was like, listen, the demise of
you, you are never coming back from this negative ground you are now in. I hate you. You are not a heroine. I want to kill you slowly, twice.
Well, that's what Anne Gracie does now. That she sort of, in everything, puts out, no dog is going to die in the course of this story.
No particular.
So speaking of Anne Gracie, who are your favorite Australian authors?
You know, it's funny. I love Anna Campbell. I can only read her like once a year because the emotional fallout lasts forever.
Yeah.
Oh my, I read an Anna Campbell and then I'm like, I'm gutted for like months.
I got a hold of her latest release,
Seven Nights in a Rogue's Bed.
Right, and I asked her, is it deep, dark, and troubled and tortured? And she said yes, but she said the next one is going to be lighter.
You know, I don't think it was
lighter, like I'll only need Prozac. Lighter, like it'll actually be happy because
she said it was light.
She said it was playful. She
all
said
right,
that the hero and the heroine are actually playful with each
other.
But I didn't find Seven Nights very, very.
As dark as
she has been in the past.
It's really
it's a Beauty and the Beast story.
Okay.
You can't be an Anna Campbell novel with it, that dark gothic feel. But it wasn't as intense as, definitely wasn't as intense as Claiming the Courtesan.
Oh my God.
It was probably on the same level as My Reckless Surrender, which is probably my favorite of hers. So it's okay. You can read that one.
I love Anna Campbell just because as a writer, she is so skilled. And the fact that she can so easily identify and create emotional response, even if I try not to, I'm going to react. It's very difficult.
And her vocabulary.
Oh.
Her vocabulary is intense.
She has a wonderful, wonderful understanding of what you can do with words. The other writer whose vocabulary I love is Sherry Thomas.
Absolutely.
I think she reintroduces me into what English can do every time I read her books, which is astonishing because it's her second language. So she's operating with a secondary language that's separate from the first language that she's learned, and she's reintroducing me to my primary language. I love that about
her.
Have
you read her last trilogy?
Yeah, I haven't read all of it.
I haven't read the third one. What do you think of the first two, though? Let me lead into that. I was a little disappointed with this trilogy because it's almost... when I read her, I really come to expect sort of really unexpected plots, really interesting characters, things that are, you know, taking historical romance and just giving it a little bit of a twist, still following the rules, but with something different. And these last three have felt a little bit more generic, I think.
And they were very established tropes. And
yes,
that's
exactly
new with them. But the erotic novella...
Oh, I haven't read that one.
The Bride of Larkspear.
Mm-hmm.
It's the erotic novella that's discussed in one of the other books that one of the characters writes.
Yes, okay.
It's really kind of powerful.
Is it?
It's, okay. I read it. It's one of the books I read on the plane, and I was like, whoa, I'm on a Kindle. You can see this? Wow.
I'll have to look it up. I didn't realize that it existed as a separate entity.
I think it came out just last week or the week before. It's very new. Very, very new.
But, I mean, as with Julianne Long, you know, a Sherry Thomas novel that's not as good as her other Sherry Thomas novels.
It's
still way up here.
That's all we have time for in this episode, and I hope you enjoyed listening to our chat. You can find the show notes by going to bookthingo.com.au/podcast and clicking on episode number 1. The notes will include links to all the books and other awesome things we mentioned today, including Rudy's shoes. And speaking of Rudy, the audio for this podcast was produced by Rudy Bremer. And when I say that Rudy is our audio producer, it means she did everything to make this podcast sound amazing. Any sound problems are totally my fault. In part two of my conversation with Sarah and Kate, we talk about many books by many authors, including 50 Shades of Grey. We also, and I'm sorry we couldn't help ourselves, we talk about tentacle porn, sexy times with shapeshifters, and how much porn informs erotic romance, and, you know, other fun things. That episode will be available at bookthingo.com.au, iTunes, and Stitcher very soon. So make sure you come back for more.